I can't have this happening to my family, and we do got little ones.
He turned to Dad.
Sorry, Ernst. I gotta side with Thelma.
Dad took a step back, put distance between him and the old man.
Sure, Earl,
he said tightly.
Whatever you say, man.
Just like that, the argument ended for the Harlins. Lenny saw the way they came together as a family, forgave each other, began talking about other things. Lenny wondered if any of them even noticed how her father hung back, how he watched them, the way his mouth flattened into an angry line. 16. In May, the sandpipers returned by the thousands, flying overhead in a swarm of wings, touching down briefly in the bay before continuing their journey north. So many birds returned to Alaska in this month that the sky was constantly busy and the air was loud with birdsong and squawking and cawing. Usually, this time of year, Lenny would lie in bed listening to the noises, identifying each bird by its song, noting the seasons passing by their arrivals and departures, looking forward to summer. This year was different. There were only 2 weeks of school left.
You're awfully quiet,
Dad said as he turned the truck into the school parking lot. He parked next to Matthew's pickup. I'm fine, she said, reaching for the door handle.
It's the security, isn't it?
Lenny turned to look at him. What?
You and your mom have been sort of mopey and glum since our last time at the Harlins' place. I know you're scared.
Lenny just stared at him, unsure of what the right answer was. He had been extra edgy since the fallout at the Harlan place.
Thelma's an optimist, one of those head-in-the-sanders. Of course she doesn't want to face the truth head-on, 'cause it's ugly. But looking away is no answer. We need to prepare for the worst. I would die before I'd let anything happen to you or your mom. You know that, right? You know how much I love you both.
He tousled her hair.
Don't worry, Red. I'll keep you safe.
She got out of the truck and slammed the door shut behind her, then hauled her bicycle out from the truck bed. Settling her backpack strap over one shoulder, she leaned her bike against the fence and headed towards school. Dad honked the horn and drove away.
Psst, Lenny.
She glanced sideways. Matthew stood hidden in the trees across from the school. He waved her over. Lenny waited for her dad's truck to disappear around the corner and then hurried over to Matthew. What's up?
Let's skip school today and take the Tusty into Homer.
Skip school? Homer?
Come on, it'll be fun.
Lenny knew all the reasons to say no. She also knew that today was a minus tide and her dad was going to be clamming all morning.
We won't get caught. And even if we do, big whoop, we're seniors. It's May. Don't seniors in the outside skip all the time?
Lenny didn't think it was a good idea, thought it might even be dangerous, but she couldn't say no to Matthew. She heard the low, elegiac honking of the ferry's horn as it neared the dock. Matthew reached out for Lenny's hand, and the next thing she knew, they were running out of the school's parking lot and up the hill, past the old church and out onto the waiting ferry. Lenny stood on the dock, holding on to the railing as the boat eased away from land. All summer, the trusty Tustamina hauled Alaskans around. Fishermen, adventurers, laborers, tourists, even high school sports teams. The hull was full of cars and supplies, construction equipment, tractors, backhoes, steel beams. To the few hardy tourists who used the boat as a blue-collar cruise to remote destinations, the ferry crossing was a pretty way to spend the day. To locals, this was simply the way to town. Lenny had ridden this ferry hundreds of times in her life, but never had she felt the sense of freedom on it that she felt now, or possibility, as if maybe this old ship could sail her right into a brand new future. Wind ruffled her hair. Gulls and shorebirds squawked overhead, wheeling and diving, floating on tufts of wind. The seawater was flat and green, only a few motor ripples on the surface. Matthew moved in behind her, put his arms around her, held on to the railing. She couldn't help leaning back into him, letting his body warm her.
I can't believe we're doing this, she said.
For once, she felt like an ordinary teenager. This was as close as she and Matthew could get to that, to being the kind of kids who went to the movies on Saturday night and went for milkshakes at the A&W afterward.
I got into the university in Anchorage, Matthew said. I'll be playing hockey for their team.
Lenny turned. With him still holding on to the railing, it meant she was in his arms. Her hair whipped across her face.
Come with me, he said.
It was like a beautiful flower, that idea. It bloomed and then died in her hand. Life was different for Matthew. He was talented and wealthy. Mr. Walker wanted his son to go to college.
We can't afford it, and they need me to work the homestead anyway.
There are scholarships.
I can't leave, she said quietly.
I know your dad is weird, but why can't you leave?
It's not him I can't leave, Lenny said. It's my mama. She needs me.
She's a grown-up.
Lenny couldn't say the words that would explain it. He would never understand why Lenny sometimes believed she was the only thing keeping her mother alive. Matthew pulled her into his arms, held her. She wondered if he could feel the way she was trembling.
Jeez, Len,
he whispered into her hair. Had he meant that, to shorten her name, to claim it somehow as something new in his hands?
I would if I could, she said.
After that, they fell silent. She thought about how different their worlds were, and it showed her how big the world was outside. They were just two kids among millions. When the boat landed in Homer, they disembarked with a throng of people. Holding hands, they lost themselves among the crowd of bright-eyed tourists and drably dressed locals. They ate halibut and chips on the restaurant's deck at the tip of the spit, tossing salty, greasy fries to the birds waiting nearby. Matthew bought Lenny a photo album at a souvenir shop that sold Alaska-themed Christmas ornaments and t-shirts that said things like, "Don't moose with me," and "Got crabs?" They talked about nothing and everything, inconsequential things, the beauty of Alaska, the craziness of the tide, the clog of cars and people on the spit. Lenny took a picture of Matthew in front of the Salty Dog Saloon. 100 years ago, it had been the post office and grocery store for this out-of-the-way spot that even Alaskans called Land's End. Now the old girl was a dark, twisty tavern where locals rubbed elbows with tourists, and the walls were decorated in memorabilia. Matthew wrote Lenny and Matthew on a dollar bill and pinned it to the wall, where it was immediately lost among the thousands of bills and scraps of paper around it. It was the single best day of Lenny's life. So much so that when it ended and they were on a water taxi, seated on a bench in the aft, heading for Connick, she had to battle a wave of sadness. On the Tusty and in town, they'd been two kids in a crowd. Now it was just them and the water taxi captain and a lot of water around them.
I wish we didn't have to go back, she said.
He put an arm around her, pulled her close. The boat rose and fell with the waves, unsteadying them.
Let's run away, he said.
She laughed.
No, really. I can see us traveling the world, backpacking through Central America, climbing up to Machu Picchu. We'll settle down when we've seen it all. I'll be an airline pilot or a paramedic. You'll be a photographer. We'll come back here to where we belong and get married and have kids who won't listen to us.
Lenny knew he was just playing around, daydreaming, but his words sparked a deep yearning in her, one she'd never known existed. She had to force herself to smile, to play along as if this hadn't struck her in the heart.
I'm a photographer, huh? I like the idea of that. I think I'll wear makeup and high heels to pick up my Pulitzer. Maybe I'll order a martini. But I don't know about kids.
Kids, definitely. I want a daughter with red hair. I'll teach her to skip rocks and hook a king salmon.
Lenny didn't answer. It was such a silly conversation. How could it break her heart? He should know better than to dream so big and to give voice to those dreams. He had lost his mother, and she had a dangerous father. Families and the future were fragile. The water taxi slowed, drifted sideways into the dock. Matthew jumped off and looped a line around a metal cleat. Lenny stepped out onto the dock as Matthew tossed the line back on board.
"We're home," he said.
Lenny stared up at the buildings perched on barnacled, muddy stilts above the water. Home. Back to real life. At work the next afternoon, Lenny made one mistake after another. She mismarked the boxes of 3-penny nails and put them in the wrong place, and then stood there staring at her mistake, thinking, could I go to college? Was it possible?
"Go home," Large Marge said, coming up behind her. "Your mind is somewhere else today."
"I'm fine," Lenny said.
"No, you're not."
She gave Lenny a knowing look.
"I saw you and Matthew walking through town yesterday. You're playing with fire, kid."
What do you mean?"
"You know what I mean. Do you want to talk about it?"
"There's nothing to talk about."
"You must think I was born yesterday. Be careful, that's all I'll say."
Lenny didn't even respond. Words were beyond her, as was logical thought. She left the store and retrieved her bicycle and rode home. Once there, she fed the animals, carted water from the spring they'd dug a few years ago, and opened the cabin door. Her mind was so overrun by thoughts and emotions that honestly, the next thing she knew, she was in the kitchen with her mama, but she had no memory of getting there. Mama was kneading bread dough. She looked up as the door banged shut, her floury hands lifting from the mound of dough.
"What's wrong?"
"Why do you say that?" Lenny asked, but she knew. She was close to tears, although why, she wasn't sure. All she knew was that Matthew had pulled the world out of shape. He had altered her view of things, opened her up. Suddenly, all she could think about was the end of school and him going away to college without her. "Lenny?" Mama wiped her floury hands on a wash rag and tossed it aside.
"You look brokenhearted."
Before Lenny could answer, she heard a vehicle drive up. She saw a shiny white pickup truck pull into the yard. The Walker truck.
"Oh, no."
Lenny ran for the cabin door, flung it open. Matthew stepped out of the truck, into their yard. Lenny crossed the deck, rushed down the steps.
"You shouldn't have come here."
"Well, you were so quiet at school today, and then you ran off to work. I thought, did I do something wrong?"
Lenny was happy to see him, and scared that he was here. It felt to her like all she did was say no and goodbye to him, and she wanted so, so much to say yes. Dad came around from the side of the cabin, holding an axe. He was flushed with exertion, damp with sweat. He saw Matthew and came to a sudden stop.
"You aren't welcome on this land, Matthew Walker. If you and your dad want to pollute your own place, apparently I can't stop you. But you stay off my land, and you stay away from my daughter. You understand? You Walkers are a blight on our landscape, with your saloon upgrades and your hotel and your damn adventure lodge plans. You'll ruin Connick, turn it into goddamn Disneyland."
Matthew frowned.
"Did you say Disneyland? Get the hell out of here before I decide you're trespassing and shoot you." "I'm going."
Matthew didn't sound scared at all, but that was impossible. He was a kid, being threatened by a man holding an axe. Watching him go hurt more than Lenny would have thought possible. She turned away from her father and went into the house and just stood there, staring at nothing, missing Matthew in a way that pushed everything else away. Mama came in a moment later. She crossed the room, opened her arms, saying,
"Oh, baby girl."
Lenny burst into tears. Mama tightened her hold, stroked Lenny's hair, then led her to the sofa where they sat down.
"You're attracted to him. How could you not be? He's gorgeous. And you alone and lonely all these years."
Leave it to Mama to say the words out loud. Lenny had felt alone for a long time. "I understand," Mama said. It helped, those few words, reminded Lenny that in the vast landscape of Alaska, this cabin was a world of its own, and her mama understood.
"It's dangerous, though. You see that, right?"
"Yeah," Lenny said. "I see it."
For the first time, Lenny understood all the books she'd read about broken hearts and unrequited love. It was physical, this pain of hers. The way she missed Matthew was like a sickness. When she woke the next morning, after a restless night, her eyes felt gritty. Light blared down through the skylight, bright enough to force her to shield her eyes from it. She dressed in yesterday's clothes and climbed down from the loft. Without bothering to eat breakfast, she went outside and fed the animals and jumped onto her bike and rode away. In town, she waved to Large Marge, who was outside the general store washing windows, and pedaled past Crazy Pete and turned into the school parking lot. Leaving her bicycle in the tall grass by the chain-link fence, she clamped her backpack to her chest and went into the classroom. Matthew's desk was empty.
"Makes sense," she muttered. "He's probably halfway to Fairbanks after seeing how crazy my dad is."
"Hey, Lenny," Ms. Rhodes said brightly. "Can you handle teaching today? An injured eagle needs help at the center in Homer. I thought I'd go."
"Sure, why not?"
"I knew you'd be my ace in the hole. Moppet is doing some long division, and Agnes and Martha are working on their history papers. You and Matthew are supposed to read T.S. Eliot today."
Lenny forced a smile as Ms. Rhodes left the classroom. She glanced at the clock, thought, maybe he's late, and then set about helping the girls with their assignments. The day crawled forward, with Lenny constantly looking at the clock until it finally struck 3 o'clock.
"That's it, kiddos. School's done."
When the kids were gone and the classroom fell silent, Lenny packed up her stuff and was the last person to leave the school. Outside, she retrieved her bicycle and pedaled idly down the center of Main Street in no hurry to get home. Overhead, a bush plane puttered in a lazy arc, giving its passengers a good view of the small town perched on a boardwalk along the water's edge. The marshes behind town were in full bloom, clumps of grass fluttering in the breeze. The air smelled of dust and new grass and murky water. In the distance, a red kayak moved among the thick growth on its way out to the sea. She heard hammering at the saloon, but there were no workers to be seen outside. She came to the bridge. Normally, on a day this bright at the start of the season, it would be crammed with men and women and children standing shoulder to shoulder, lines in the water, the kids on tiptoes peering over the edge into the crystal clear river below. Now, there was only one person standing here. Matthew. She coasted to a stop, stepped down on one foot, rested the other on the pedal.
"What are you doing?"
"Waiting."
"For what?"
"You."
Lenny dismounted the bike and fell into step beside him as he led her back toward town. The bicycle clanged and thumped over the bumpy gravel of Main Street. Every now and then, the bell made a shivering little ringing sound. Lenny glanced nervously at the saloon as they passed it, but didn't see Clyde or Ted working. She didn't want anyone to tell her dad they'd seen her with Matthew. They hiked up the hill past the church and ducked into the Sitka spruce trees. Lenny set her bike down and followed Matthew to the point that jutted out over a black rock cliff.
"I didn't sleep last night," Matthew said at last.
"Me either."
"I was thinking about you."
She could have said the same thing, but didn't dare. He took her by the hand, led her to the bower he'd made before. They sat down, leaned back against a crumbling, moss-draped nurse log. Lenny heard the waves on the rocks below. The ground smelled fecund and sweet. Shade fell in star-shaped patches between the strands of sunlight.
"I talked to my dad last night about us. I even went to the diner to call my sister."
"Us?" "Uh-huh."
"Dad said I was playing with fire, wanting you."
"Wanting you?"
"Allie asked if I'd kissed you yet. When I said no, she said, "What the hell, baby brother? Get going." She knows how much I like you. So, can I kiss you?
She barely nodded, but it was enough. His lips brushed tentatively against hers. It was like every love story she'd ever read. This first kiss changed her, opened her up to a world she'd never imagined, a big, bright, shining universe full of unexpected possibilities. When he drew back, Lenny stared at him.
Us. This. It's dangerous.
Yeah, I guess. But it doesn't matter, does it?
No,
Lenny said quietly. She knew that she was making a decision she might regret, but it felt inevitable.
Nothing matters except us.
Come away to college with me, Len, please. U of A is beautiful. You could still get in for fall. We could go together. Together. At home, she put her bicycle away and fed the animals, but she was so distracted she dropped an entire bucket of grain. Then she hauled water from the spring at the top of the hill. An hour later, when she'd finished her chores, she saw her parents go down to the beach and stand by the boat. They were going fishing. They'd be gone for hours. She could ride her bike to Matthew's house, let him kiss her again. Her parents wouldn't even know she'd been gone. Stupid plan. She would see Matthew tomorrow. Tomorrow felt like a lifetime away. She yanked up her bicycle and jumped aboard and pedaled away, past the canoe Dad had dragged home from the dump last week and the rotting husk of a dirt bike he'd been unable to get running again. The shadows of the driveway plunged down around her, chilled her. She pedaled out onto the main road, back into the sunshine, and rode the quarter mile to the gated driveway. Wheeling around the open gate, she passed beneath the painted arch with its tanned silver salmon carved into the wood and kept going. This is dangerous, she thought, but she couldn't make herself care. All she could think about now was Matthew and how it had felt when he kissed her and how much she wanted to kiss him again. Here, the road was not so muddy. Someone had obviously taken the time to regrade the earth and put down gravel. It was the kind of thing her father would never do, smooth out a road to make life easier. She came to a bumpy, breathless stop in front of the Walker house. Matthew was carrying a huge bale of hay over to the cattle pen. He saw her and dropped the bale and came toward her. He wore an oversized hockey sweater and shorts and rubber boots.
Len?
She loved how he had renamed her, made her into someone else, someone only he knew.
Are you okay?
I missed you, she said.
Stupid. They had barely been apart.
I wish... We need time together.
I'll come over to see you tomorrow night, he said, taking her in his arms. It was where she wanted to be.
What do you mean?
I'll sneak over to see you.
He said it with such conviction that she didn't know what to say.
Tomorrow night?
You can't.
At midnight. Sneak out to meet me.
It's too dangerous.
You guys have an outhouse, right? So it's no big deal to go out. And do they ever look up in the loft for you in the middle of the night?
She could dress warmly and go out and just not come back for a while. They could steal an hour together, maybe more. Alone. If she said no right now, it would prove that Lenny could live a sensible life with the kind of love that no one would ever compare to heroin, and she would never cry herself to sleep.
Please, I need to see you.
Lenny!
She heard her father's voice yelling at her. She pushed Matthew away, but too late. Her father had seen them together, and now he was striding toward them while Mama ran along behind him.
What the hell are you doing over here?
Dad said.
I...
She couldn't answer. Stupid, stupid, stupid. She shouldn't have come here.
I thought I told you to stay away from my Lenora,
Dad said. He grabbed Lenny by the bicep, yanked her to his side. Lenny bit down hard so she wouldn't make a sound. She didn't want Matthew to know her dad had hurt her.
Lenny,
Matthew said, frowning.
Stay back, she said. Please.
Come on, Lenny,
Dad said, pulling her away. Lenny stumbled along beside her father, crashing into him and pulling away on the uneven ground. If she got too far, he wrenched her back to his side. Mama hurried along beside, walking with Lenny's bicycle. Back in their yard, Lenny yanked free and almost fell, scrambled across the muddy grass, faced him.
"I didn't do anything wrong," she cried.
"Ernt," Mama said, trying to sound reasonable.
"They're just friends."
Dad turned to Mama.
"So you knew about them?"
"You're overreacting," Mama said evenly. "He's in Lenny's class, that's all."
"You knew,"
Dad said to her again.
"No," Lenny said, suddenly afraid.
"I saw her leave,"
Dad said.
"But you saw her go too, didn't you, Cora? And you knew where she was going."
Mama shook her head.
No, I thought she was going to work, maybe, or to pick some balm of Gilead.
"You're lying to me,"
he said.
"Dad, please, it's my fault,"
Lenny said. He wasn't listening. His eyes had that wild, desperate look.
"You know better than to hide things from me."
He grabbed Mama and dragged her toward the cabin. Lenny followed them, tried to pull Mama away. Dad shoved Mama inside and Lenny out of the way. The door slammed shut. The bolt came down hard with a clank and locked them inside. Then, from behind the door, a loud crash, a bitten-off scream. Lenny hurled herself at the door, banged on it, screaming to be let in. 17. The next morning, the left side of Mama's face was swollen and purple. One eye was blackening. She sat alone at the table, a cup of coffee in front of her.
"What were you thinking? He saw you leave and followed your tire tracks in the mud."
Lenny sat down at the table, ashamed of herself.
"I wasn't thinking. Hormones. I told you they were wicked dangerous."
Mama leaned forward.
"Here's the thing, baby girl. You are on thin ice. You know it. I know it. You need to stay away from this boy or something bad is going to happen. He kissed me.
He wants me to sneak out to meet him tonight." Mama sat there a long time, quiet.
"Well, one kiss can change a girl's world, don't I know that? But you're not an ordinary girl in the suburbs with a Mr. Cleaver dad. Choices have consequences, Lenny. Not just for you either, for your boy. For me."
She touched her bruised cheekbone, wincing.
"You need to stay away from him.
Meet me. Midnight." All day, Lenny thought about it. At school, every time she looked at Matthew, she knew what he was thinking. "Please" was the last thing he said to her. She'd said no and meant it, but when she got home and started on her long list of chores, she found herself waiting impatiently for the sun to set. Time was not something she usually paid much attention to. On the homestead, the bigger picture mattered. The darkening of the sky, the ebbing of the tide, the snow hairs changing color, the birds returning or flying south. That was how they marked the passage of time in growing seasons and salmon runs and the first snowfall. On school days, she took notice of the clock, but in a lackadaisical way. No one much cared if you got to school on time, not in the winter, when some days it was so cold the trucks wouldn't start, and not in the spring and fall, when there were so many chores to do. But now time commanded her attention. Down in the living room, Mama and Dad were cuddled together on the couch, talking quietly. Dad kept touching Mama's bruised face and murmuring apologies, telling her how much he loved her. At just past 10 p.m., she heard Dad say,
"Well, Cora, I am about to drop."
And Mama answered,
"Me too."
Her parents turned off the generator and fed the fire one last time. Then Lenny heard the rattle of the beaded curtain being pushed aside as they went into their room. Then, quiet. She lay there, counting whatever she could, her breaths, her heartbeats. She willed time to pass, even as its passage frightened her. She imagined different scenarios, going to meet Matthew, staying in bed, not getting caught, getting caught. She told herself repeatedly that she was not waiting for midnight, that she wasn't stupid and reckless enough to sneak out. Midnight came. She heard the last little click of the hand on her clock. She heard a bird call through her window, a little trill of sound that wasn't quite real. Matthew. She climbed out of bed and dressed warmly. Every creak of the ladder terrified her, made her freeze in place. Every footstep on the floor did the same thing, so that it took her forever to reach the door. She stepped into her rubber boots and slipped into a down vest. Holding her breath, she unclicked the lock, slid the bar latch, and opened the door. Night air rushed in to greet her. She could see Matthew standing on the crest of the hill above the beach, his outline against a pink and amethyst sky. Lenny closed the door and ran to him. He took her hand, and together they ran through the grassy, wet yard, slipped over the rise, and down to the rickety stairs to the beach, where Matthew had laid out a blanket and set big rocks on each of the four corners. She lay down. He did the same. Lenny felt the warmth of his body along hers, and it made her feel safe, even with all the risk they were taking. Normal kids would probably be talking nonstop, or laughing, something. Maybe drinking beer or smoking pot or making out, but Lenny and Matthew both knew they weren't ordinary kids for whom sneaking out was expected. The crazy wildness of her father's anger hung in the air between them. She could hear the sea washing toward them and the spruce trees creaking in the murmur of a spring breeze. A pale, ambient light shone on everything, illuminated the lavender night sky. Matthew pointed out constellations, told her their stories. The world around them felt different, magical, a place of infinite possibility instead of hidden dangers. He turned onto his side. They were nose to nose now. She could feel his breathing on her face, feel a strand of his hair across her cheek. "I talked to Miss Rhodes," he said. "She said you could still get into U of A. Think of it, Len. We could be together, away from all of this. It's expensive. They have scholarships and low-interest loans. We could do it. Totally." Lenny dared, just for a second, to imagine it. A life. Her life. "I could apply," she said. But even as she heard her dream-given voice, she thought of the price. Mama would be the one to pay it. How could Lenny live with that? But was she supposed to be trapped forever by her mother's choice and her father's rage? He slipped a necklace around her throat, fumbled to clasp it in the dark. "I carved it," he said. She felt it, a heart made of bone hanging on a metal chain as thin as cobweb. "Come to college with me, Len," he said. She touched his face, felt how different his skin was from hers, rougher, whiskery here and there. He pressed his body to hers, hip to hip. They kissed. She felt his breathing turn ragged. She hadn't known until now how love could erupt into existence like the Big Bang Theory and change everything in you and everything in the world. She believed in Matthew, suddenly, in the possibility of him, of them, the way she believed in gravity or that the earth was round. It was crazy. Crazy. When he kissed her, she glimpsed a whole new world, a new Lenny. She drew back. The depth of this new feeling was terrifying. Real love grew slowly, didn't it? It couldn't be this fast, like a crashing together of planets. Yearning. She knew what it felt like now. Yearning. An old word, from Jane Eyre's world, and as new to Lenny as this second.
"Lenny! Lenny!"
Her father's voice, yelling. Lenny jackknifed up. "Oh, God. Stay here." She scrambled up and ran for the weathered steps. She rushed up their zigzagged path, her down vest flapping open, her boots clomping on the chicken wire-covered steps.
"Here I am, Dad!"
she yelled, out of breath, waving her arms.
"Thank God," he said. "I got up to take a leak and saw that your boots were gone."
Boots. That was her mistake. Such a small thing. She pointed skyward. Did he notice how hard she was breathing? Could he hear the thud of her heart?
"Look at the sky. It's so beautiful."
"Ah."
She stood beside him, Trying to calm down, he put an arm around her shoulders. She felt claimed by the hold.
Summer is magical, isn't it?
The grassy hillside hid the beach from view, thank God. Lenny couldn't see the curl of pebbled stone and crushed shells or the blanket Matthew had carried over, nor could she see Matthew. He was well below the crest of the hill between the cabin and the beach. She clasped the bone heart around her neck, felt its sharp point burrow into her palm.
Don't do that again, Rhett. You know better. The bears are dangerous this time of year. I almost grabbed my gun and came looking for you.
Personal Statement by Lenora Albright. It's a dangerous road, Frodo, going out your door. You step onto the road, and if you don't keep your feet, there's no knowing where you might be swept off to. If you knew me, you wouldn't be surprised at all that I start my college essay off with a quote from Tolkien. Books are the mile markers of my life. Some people have family photos or home movies to record their past. I've got books. Characters. For as long as I can remember, books have been my safe place. I read about places I can barely imagine and lose myself in journeys to foreign lands to save girls who didn't know they were really princesses. Only recently have I learned why I needed those faraway worlds. I was taught by my father to be afraid of the world, and some of the lessons stuck. I read about Patty Hearst and the Zodiac Killer and the massacre at the Munich Olympics and Charles Manson, and I knew the world was a terrifying place. He said it all of the time, reminded me that mountains could blow up and kill people in their sleep. Governments were corrupt. A flu could come out of nowhere and kill millions. A nuclear bomb could fall at any second, obliterating everything. I learned to shoot the head off of a paper target while on the run. I have a bug-out bag full of survival supplies by my front door. I can start a fire with flint and put a gun together blindfolded. I know how to adjust a gas mask for the perfect fit. I have grown up preparing for a war or anarchy or worldwide tragedy. But none of it is true. Or it's true, but not the truth, which is the kind of distinction adults make. My parents left Washington State when I was 13. We came to Alaska and forged a subsistence life in the bush. I love it. I do. I love the harsh, uncompromising beauty of Alaska. I love the women most of all. Women like my neighbor, Large Marge, who used to be a lawyer and now runs a grocery store. I love how tough she is and how compassionate. I love how my mom, who is as fragile as a fern frond, has still managed to survive out here in a climate designed to destroy her. I love all of it, and I love this state that has given me a place to belong, a home. But it's time for me to leave the homestead and make my own way, to learn about the real world. That's why I want to go to college. In the days after that night on the beach, Lenny became a thief, invisible when she wanted to be. It was an illusion she'd practiced all of her life, and now, as she became a stealer of time, it served her well. She also became a liar. Straight-faced, even smiling, she lied to her father to steal the time she needed. There was a test to be taken early, at least an hour, a field trip that would keep her at school late, a research project that required her to take the skiff to the library in Seldovia. She met Matthew in the woods, in the shadowy stacks at Large Marge's store, or in the abandoned cannery. In class, they were always touching under the desk. They celebrated his birthday together after school, sitting on the dock behind an aging metal boat. It was wonderful, exhilarating. She learned things no book had ever taught her, how falling in love felt like an adventure, how her body seemed to change at his touch, the way her armpits ached after an hour of holding him tightly, how her lips puffed and chapped from his kisses, and how his rough beard growth could burn her skin. Stolen time became the engine that powered her world. On weekends, when hours without Matthew stretched out before her, she felt an almost unbearable need to leave the homestead, run to him, find a way to steal just 10 more minutes. The specter of school's end cast a long shadow. Today, When Lenny slid into her desk at school, she looked at Matthew and almost started to cry. He reached across the desk, took her hand in his.
Are you okay?
Lenny couldn't help thinking how small they were in this big, dangerous world. Just kids who wanted to be in love. Ms. Rhodes clapped her hands at the front of the room, demanded attention.
There's only a week of school left, and I thought it would be a good day for a boat ride and a hike. So, everyone, grab your coats and let's go.
Ms. Rhodes herded her chattering charges out of the classroom and through town and down to the docks. Everyone boarded Ms. Rhodes' aluminum fishing boat. They motored out into the bay and sped up, bumping across the waves, water splashing at their sides. The teacher guided the boat up the waters of the fjord, mountains all around them, down one stretch of water and up another, until they stopped seeing any cabins or boats at all. Here, the water was aquamarine. Lenny could see a sow and two black cubs walking along an isolated shore. Ms. Rhodes pulled up to a dock in a narrow cove. Matthew jumped onto the weathered dock and tied the boat down.
Matthew's grandparents homesteaded this land in 32, Ms. Rhodes said. It was their first family homestead. Who wants to see a pirate cave?
Pandemonium. Ms. Rhodes led the younger kids up the beach, marching through the heavy sand, stepping over huge pieces of driftwood. When they rounded the corner of the bay and disappeared, Matthew took Lenny by the hand.
Come on, he said at last. I'll show you something cool.
He led her upland into knee-deep grass that ended at a sparse forest of stunted trees.
Shh,
he said, pressing a finger to his lips. After that, Lenny noticed every twig that broke beneath her and every whisper of the wind. Occasionally, a bush plane puttered overhead. At a wall of greenery, bushes grown to Alaskan size from all the water that ran down from the mountains, he showed her a path she wouldn't have seen on her own. They ducked into it, walked hunched over in the cool shadows. A small seam of light drew them forward. Lenny's eyes adjusted slowly. A vista opened up in the break between the bushes. Marshland as far as the eye could see. Tall, waving green grass through which meandered a lazy, motionless river. Mountains were tucked in close, arms drawn protectively around the marshes. Lenny counted 15 huge brown bears in the marshes, munching on the grass, pawing for fish in the stagnant water. They were great, shaggy creatures, called grizzly bears by most of the world, with giant heads. They moved in a shambling way, as if their bones were held together with rubber bands. Mama bears kept their cubs close and away from the males. Lenny watched the majestic animals move through the tall grass.
Wow.
A bush plane banked overhead, began its descent.
My grandpa took me here when I was just a kid, Matthew whispered. I remember telling him he was crazy to homestead land so close to the bears, and he said, it's Alaska, as if that were the only answer that mattered. My grandparents relied on their dogs to run off the bears if they came too close. The government created a national refuge around us.
Only here, Lenny said with a laugh.
She leaned against Matthew. Only here. God, she loved this place. She loved Alaska's wild ferocity, its majestic beauty. Even more than the land, she loved the people to whom it spoke. She hadn't realized until just this moment how deep her love for Alaska ran.
Matthew! Lenny!
They heard Ms. Rhodes yelling for them. They ducked back through the scrub brush and came out on the beach. Ms. Rhodes was there, with the younger girls gathered around her. Off to her left, a float plane was pulled up onto the beach.
Hurry, Ms. Rhodes said, waving her hand. Martha, Agnes, get in the plane. We have to get back to Connick. Mad Earl has had a heart attack.
Mad Earl died. Lenny couldn't quite wrap her mind around it. Yesterday, the old man had been alive, vibrant, drinking moonshine, telling stories. The compound had been a busy place, a hide of activity. Chainsaws whirring, steel being fired into blades over open flames, axes chopping wood, dogs barking. Without him, it fell into quiet. Lenny didn't cry for Mad Earl. She wasn't that much of a hypocrite, but she wanted to weep for the loss she saw in the faces around her, for Thelma and Ted and Moppet and Clyde and the rest of the people who lived at the compound. The blank space left by Mad Earl would hurt for a long time. Now they were all out in the bay, near the boat launch below the Russian church. Lenny sat in the dented aluminum canoe that her father had salvaged a few years ago, with Mama in front of her. Dad was behind Lenny, keeping them steady in the water. There were boats all around them, floating in the calm of this bright day. They had gathered for their version of a funeral. It was almost summer. You could feel it in the sun's heat. Hundreds of snow geese had returned to the head of the bay. The craggy shoreline, empty and slicked with ice all winter, now bore all manner of life. On a rock in the middle of the water, a green and black tower of stone that rose up from the deep, sea lions crowded over one another. Seagulls flew above them in lazy white arcs, yapping like terriers. She saw nesting gulls and diving cormorants. Seals with black or silver cocker spaniel faces poked their noses up from the water alongside otters who lay lazily on their backs, cracking clams in quick-moving paws. Not far away, Matthew sat in a shiny aluminum skiff with his father. Every time Matthew looked at Lenny, she looked away, afraid to reveal her feelings for him in such a public place. "My daddy loved this place," Thelma was saying, her words swaying in time to the music made by her oar in the water. "He will be missed." Lenny watched Thelma pour a stream of ashes from a cardboard box. They floated for a moment, fanned out, creating a murky stain, then slowly sank. Silence fell. Most of Connick was out here, or so it seemed. The Harlans, Tom and Matthew Walker, Large Marge, Natalie, Calhoun Malvey and his new wife, Tika Rhodes and her husband, and all the merchants. There was even a bunch of old-timers, men who lived so far off the grid and so deep in the bush they were hardly ever seen. They had few teeth and lots of stringy hair and hollowed-out cheeks. Several had dogs in their boats. Crazy Pete and Matilda stood on the shore, side by side. One by one, the boats floated back to shore, were beached. Mr. Walker carried Thelma's kayak up the beach and tossed it into the back of a rusted pickup. People instinctively looked to Mr. Walker to say something more, to bring them all together. They gathered close to him.
"I'll tell you what, Thelma," Mr. Walker said. "Why don't you all come over to my place? I'll throw some salmon on the fire and get out a case of cold beer. We can give Earl a send-off he'd love." "The big man offering to host the wake for a man he looked down on,"
Dad said.
"We don't need your charity, Tom. We will say goodbye in our own way."
Lenny wasn't the only one who flinched at the stridency of her father's voice. She saw shock on the faces around her.
"Ernt," Mama said, "not now."
"Now is the perfect time. We are saying goodbye to a man who came up here because he wanted a simpler way of life. The last thing he'd want us to do is celebrate by drinking with the man who wants to turn Connick into Los Angeles."
Dad seemed to grow while he stood there, fueled by rage and animosity. He moved forward, went to Thelma, who looked as broken as a used popsicle stick, her hair dirty, her shoulders slumped, her eyes watery. Dad squeezed Thelma's shoulder. She flinched, looked frightened.
"I'll take Earl's place. You don't have to worry. I'll make sure we stay ready for anything. I'll teach Moppet."
"You'll teach my daughter what?"
Thelma asked in an unsteady voice.
"The way you teach your wife? You think we haven't seen the way you treat her?"
Mama froze. A flush colored her cheeks.
"We're done with you," Thelma said, her voice strengthening. "You scare the kids, especially when you're drinking. My dad put up with you because of what you did for my brother, and I'm grateful for that, too. But there's something wrong with you. I don't want to rig the outside of our land with explosives, for God's sake, and no 8-year-old needs to put on a gas mask at 2 a.m. and get to the gate with her bug-out bag. My dad did things one way. I'm doing them another."
She drew in a deep breath. Her eyes glittered with tears, but Lenny saw relief, too. How long had Thelma wanted to say all this?
And now I am taking my dad's old friends to Tom's place to celebrate his life. We've known the Walkers forever. We were all friends, a community, before you showed up. If you can come and be civil, come. If you just want to tear this town apart, stay home.
Lenny saw the way people backed away from Dad. Even the bushy, bearded off-the-gridders took a step back. Thelma looked at Mama.
Come with us, Cora.
What?
But
Mama shook her head.
My wife stays with me,
Dad said. There was a long moment. No one moved or spoke. Then, slowly, the Harlins began to walk away. Dad looked around, saw how easily they'd culled him from the herd. Lenny watched their friends and neighbors get into their vehicles and drive away, boats thumping along behind them on trailers or in pickup beds. Matthew gave Lenny a long, sad look and finally turned away. When they were alone, just the three of them, Lenny glanced at Mama, who looked as worried and scared as Lenny felt. Neither had any doubt. This would push him over the edge. Dad stood still, eyes blazing with hatred, staring down the empty road.
Ernt, Mama said.
Shut up,
he hissed.
I'm thinking.
After that, and all the way home, he said nothing, which should have been better than yelling, but it wasn't. Yelling was like a bomb in the corner. You saw it, watched the fuse burn, and you knew when it would explode, and you needed to run for cover. Not speaking was a killer somewhere in your house with a gun when you were sleeping. Inside the cabin, he paced and paced. He muttered to himself, shook his head as if he were hearing something he didn't like. Lenny and Mama stayed out of his way. At supper time, Mama put some leftover moose stew on the stove to heat up, but the rich aroma did nothing to ease the tension. When Mama put dinner on the table, Dad stopped suddenly, looked up. The light in his eyes was scary. Muttering something about ingratitude and bitches with bad attitudes and pricks who thought they owned the world, he stormed out of the house.
We should lock him out, Lenny said. And let him break a window or tear a wall away to get in.
Outside, they heard a chainsaw whir to life.
We could run away, Lenny said.
Mama gave her a wan smile.
Sure. Yeah, he won't come after us.
They knew, both of them, that Lenny might be able to get away and have a life. Not Mama. He would track her down wherever she went. They ate dinner in silence, each watching the door carefully, listening for an early warning sign of trouble. Then, the door cracked open against the wall. Dad stood there, crazy-eyed, hair covered in sawdust, holding a hatchet. Mama lurched to her feet, backed away. He swept in, muttering, yanked Mama into him, drew her outside, and dragged her toward the driveway. Lenny ran behind them. She heard Mama talking to him in that soothing voice of hers. He pulled Mama toward a pair of skinned logs that created a giant barricade at the end of their driveway.
I can build a wall. Put spikes on the top, maybe razor wire. Keep us safe inside. We don't need the goddamn compound. Screw the Harlins.
But Ernt, we can't live.
Think of it,
he said, pulling her close, a hatchet hanging from one hand.
Nothing to fear from the outside world anymore. We will be safe inside, just us. That son of a bitch can turn Connick into Detroit, and we won't care. I'll protect you, Cora. From all of them. That's how much I love you.
Lenny stared in horror at the logs, imagining it. This thumbprint piece of land, walled off at the joint, cut off from the bit of civilization that would now be out there. There was no one who could stop her dad from building a wall or shutting them away. No police who would protect them or come in an emergency. And once he finished it, bolted the gate shut, would Lenny or Mama ever get out? Lenny glanced at her parents, two thin figures angled together, touching with lips and fingers, murmuring about love, Mama trying to keep him calm, Dad trying to keep her close. They would always be the way they'd been, nothing would ever change. In the naivete of her youth, her parents had seemed like towering presences, omnipotent and all-knowing, but they weren't that. They were just two broken people. She could leave them. She could break free and go her own way. It would be frightening, but it couldn't be worse than staying, watching this toxic dance of theirs, letting their world become her world until there was nothing left of her at all, until she was small as a comma. 18. At 10 p.m., the night of Mad Earl's funeral, the sky above Walker Cove was a layer of deep blue, fading to lavender at the edges. The evening's bonfire had burned down, logs turned to ash and crumbled into one another. An extreme low tide had pulled back the sea, revealing a wide swath of mud, a mirror of slick gray that reflected the color of the sky and the snow-covered mountains that rose up on the opposite shore. Clumps of shiny black mussels clung to exposed pilings. The aluminum drift boat lay angled in the mud, its line tied to the buoy. For hours there had been talk, stories about Mad Earl told in halting voices. Some had made them laugh. Most had made them all fall silent and remember. Mad Earl hadn't always been the crotchety, angry man he'd become in old age. Grief over the loss of his son had twisted him. Once he'd been Granddad Eckhart's best friend. Alaska was tough on people, especially once they got old. Now, quiet. There was only the occasional popping of the fire, the thunk of a falling bit of burnt wood, the lapping of the outgoing tide. Matthew sat in one of their old beach chairs, his legs stretched out, crossed at the ankles, watching a young eagle picking at a salmon carcass on the beach. A pair of seagulls flew close, waiting for scraps. There were only three of them left now, Dad and Large Marge and Matthew.
"Are we going to talk about it, Tom?"
Large Marge said after so long a silence that Matthew was sure they'd kick out the fire and climb the beach stairs.
"Thelma pretty much banished Ernt from their place."
"Yeah,"
Dad said. Matthew didn't like the way his father looked at Large Marge, the worry in his eyes.
"What are you two talking about?"
Matthew asked. Dad said,
"Ernt Albright is an angry man. We all know he vandalized the saloon. Thelma said tonight that he's been trying to get the Harlans to plant tripwires and explosives to protect them in case of war."
"Yeah, he's crazy like Mad Earl, but Mad Earl was harmless," Large Marge said. "Ernt will not take this banishment well. It will piss him off. When he gets mad, he gets mean, and when he gets mean, he hurts people."
"People?"
Matthew said, feeling a chill go through him.
"You mean Lenny? He'll hurt Lenny?"
Matthew didn't wait for them to answer. He ran up the stairs to the yard, where he snagged his bicycle and climbed aboard. Pedaling hard on the wet, spongy ground, he reached the main road in less than 10 minutes. At the Albright driveway, he skidded to a stop so fast his bike almost slipped out from underneath him. Two skinned logs barricaded the scrawny, neck-like entrance to the land. They were the color of salmon meat, freshly cut, a fleshy pink, studded here and there with bits of bark. What the hell? Matthew looked around, saw no movement, heard nothing. He pedaled around the logs and kept going, more slowly now, his heart thumping in his chest, worry expanding. At the end of the driveway, he dismounted, laid his bike on its side. A cautious examination of the Albright land showed no sign of trouble. Ernt's truck was parked in front of the cabin. Matthew crept forward slowly, wincing every time a twig snapped beneath his foot or he stepped on something. A beer can, a comb someone had dropped, he couldn't see in the shadows. The goats bleated, chickens squawked in alarm. He was about to take a step when he heard a sound, the cabin door opening. He threw himself into the tall grass, lay still. Footsteps on the deck, creaking. Scared to move and more scared not to, he lifted his head, looked out above the grass. Lenny stood at the edge of the porch, with a wool blanket wrapped around her in a cape of red and white and yellow stripes. She was holding a roll of toilet paper. Moonlight set it aglow.
"Lenny,"
he whispered. She looked over, saw him. Worriedly, she glanced back at the cabin, then ran for him. He stood, pulled her into his arms, held her tightly.
Are you okay?
He's building a wall, Lenny said, glancing back.
That's what those logs are for out at the road?
Lenny nodded.
I'm scared, Matthew.
Matthew started to say it will be all right, but he heard the cabin lock hitch.
Go,
Lenny whispered, shoving him away. Matthew threw himself into the cover of trees just as the door opened. He saw Ernt Albright step out onto the porch, dressed in a ragged t-shirt and baggy boxer shorts.
Lenny,
he called out. Lenny waved.
I'm here, Dad. Just dropped the TP.
She cast a desperate glance back at Matthew. He hid behind a tree. Lenny walked over to the outhouse, disappeared inside of it. Ernt waited for her on the porch, herded her back inside as soon as she was done. The door lock latched with a click behind them. Matthew retrieved his bicycle and rode home as fast as he could. He found Large Marge and his dad standing together in the yard beside Marge's truck.
He's building a wall,
Matthew said, his breath coming in gasps. He jumped off his bike and dropped it in the grass by the smokehouse.
What do you mean?
Dad said.
Ernt, you know how their land is a bottleneck and then flares out over the water? He skinned two logs and laid them across the driveway. Lenny says he's building a wall.
Jesus,
Dad said.
He'll cut them off from the world.
Lenny woke to the high-pitched whirring of the chainsaw and the occasional whack of a hatchet splitting wood. Dad had been up for hours, all weekend, building his wall. The only bright spot was that she had survived the weekend, and now it was Monday again, a school day. Matthew. Joy pushed aside the cramped, hopeless feeling of loss this weekend had birthed. She dressed for school and climbed down the ladder. The cabin was quiet. Mama came out of her bedroom dressed in a turtleneck and baggy jeans.
Morning.
Lenny went to her mother.
We have to do something before the wall is finished. He won't really do it. He was just crazed. He'll see reason. That's what you're going to rely on?
Lenny saw for the first time how old her mother looked, how drawn and defeated. There was no light in her eyes anymore, no ready smile.
I'll get you coffee.
Before Lenny made it to the kitchen, a knock rattled the cabin door. Almost simultaneously, the door swung open.
Hello, the house?
Large Marge strode forward. A dozen bracelets clattered on her fleshy wrists, earrings bobbed up and down like fishing lures, catching the light. Her hair was growing out again. She'd parted it down the middle and tied it into two pom-pom balls that flopped as she moved. Dad pushed in behind the black woman, put his hands on his bony hips.
I said you couldn't go in, goddammit.
Large Marge grinned and handed Mama a bottle of lotion. She pressed it into her hands, closed her big hands over Mama's small ones.
Thelma made this from the lavender growing in her backyard. She thought you'd love it.
Lenny could see what this small kindness meant to her mother.
We don't want your charity,
Daddy said.
She smells just fine without putting on that shit.
Girlfriends give each other gifts, Ernt, and Cora and I are friends. That's why I'm here, in fact. I thought I'd have coffee with my neighbors.
Would you get Marge some coffee, Lenny?
Mama said.
And maybe a piece of cranberry bread.
Dad crossed his arms, standing with his back to the door. Large Marge led Mama to the sofa, helped her to sit, then sat beside her. The cushion popped beneath the woman's weight.
Really, I wanted to talk to you about my diarrhea.
Good Christ.
Dad said.
It's been explosive. I wondered if you'd come across any home remedies. Good Lord, the cramping has been awful.
Dad muttered an expletive and left the cabin, slamming the door shut behind him.